Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio. Hello and happy Friday. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
Talked about very old animals this week.
We really did. Boy, did I wind up finding the middle part of it really irritating.
It is really wild to me that people kept reporting those poor scientists as though they were these, you know, ruthless killers pursuing anything for science, even death. Like, it just sounds like a pulp novel in some of them. It's like, no, dude, that's how you do it.
I sort of think that it might have gone a little better had the researchers not given Ming a name.
Yes.
Because, like, naming animals just, it leads people to personify them a lot. And we do this all the time. We name pets. A lot of zoos name their you know, most famous animals. There are some sort of wildlife centers that I've been to that intentionally don't name their animals because they're like, these are not people's pets. These are wild animals that live here a lot of time because they've had some kind of injury that means they can't survive in the wild anymore. Like, the fact that they named it, I think, was just a recipe for stuff to go wrong. But also, I got deeply frustrated at all of the news reporting that was like, those dummy scientists killed the oldest clam.
What a bunch of ding-dongs. It's like, no, dude, how do you think it happens? I will say this, because for a long time, I volunteered at a big aquarium in animal husbandry prepping diets for animals. And I went through, I don't know, probably thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of clam. There's not much to a clam. There's no brain there. It's a muscle and a system for processing waste in a shell.
Yeah.
I mean, there are the other components, but like, it to me, it's one of those things where it's not to say that, you know, respect for all living life is a thing, but also it's not, it's just not the same as to me, it doesn't bear sentience. That could be my own ignorance, but.
Yeah. Well, and I can totally, like, if a person is vegan and doesn't use any animal product in any way, I think it's reasonable to extend that to being angry that these clams were killed for research. But like, if you eat meat,
right,
or and wear leather and, like, you know, thoughtlessly squash bugs in your house, I like, there's just the outrage. I'm like, you don't have standing for this.
And I do know, I mean, I have talked to a number of biologists and animal keepers about it, that there is kind of constant debate that goes on about naming animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to balance between not wanting people to humanize them and also wanting people to have enough of a connection that things like conservation are really taken to heart. And it's a tricky balance. I don't know where the right thing is.
I have the same, like, I went to a fundraiser at a zoo recently, and I was having the same, like, mental conversation with myself about, like, the questions about keeping the animals in captivity, but also, like, raising so much awareness for, like, habitats of these animals that are being destroyed and, like, getting people to care about it.
Yeah.
So I have a tough time with those questions a lot of the times. But I am so mad that there were headlines that were like, the jerk scientists killed the oldest clam because they were thoughtless, and none of that's correct.
No, not at all. That's one of those don't read the comments scenarios.
I might have been less irritated had I not just worked on the next thing we're recording today, which had some similar themes, and that I wound up finding profoundly irritating.
I have fun stories.
Perfect.
Because we did not talk about elderly cats or dogs.
No.
But do you know about Cream Puff, the oldest cat on record?
No.
Cream Puff was 38 when she died, and she belonged to a man named Jake Perry, who lives in Austin, Texas. And she beat the record of the previous cat, Grandpa, who lived to be 34, who was also Perry's cat.
Okay.
And Perry's veterinarian has gone on record as saying, like, he has been treating his cats for like 15 years or something, and that about a third of them have lived to be at least 30, which is extraordinary.
Huh.
So people have been like, what is this guy doing that's keeping cats so healthy for so long with great longevity?
Three times longer than old cats.
Right. Okay, before I say any of this, listeners, do not give your cats people food. Do not, because a lot of the things he's given his cats are things that your veterinarian will say, please don't give that to cats.
They're
definitely on the no-fly list. So I'm reading this from an article about him in Atlas Obscura, where he said that on top of dry commercial cat food, he also made them eggs every day for breakfast, turkey bacon, and broccoli, and they got a little bit of coffee with cream. And then every 2 days, he would give them an eyedropper of red wine to help their circulation. I will tell you this, I mean, from personal experience, because I went through a I'm going to make eggs for my cats every Saturday as their brunch. Did not agree with many of my cats. Eggs. And then I talked to my vet and she's like, oh, no, a lot of cats can't tolerate eggs. So mileage may vary. Please, again, don't feed your cats coffee and wine. Coffee is very much on the no-go list because caffeine can really mess with the cat system. I don't know why he are so happy and lucky and fortunate and long-lived. Although he also, it sounds like his entire house is set up for cats.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he runs documentaries for them and even puts trailers in front of them so that they'll stay. They're indoor only, which is always going to extend their life because the outside and their curiosity are a bad combination. And he has like runs built around his house, like up the walls and stuff. So the cats have lots of climbing and exploration space. They're all getting tons of exercise. We don't know, but he's got the magic touch and people study him.
Yeah.
He is also advancing in age. So I think people want to know everything he knows in a hurry. I mean, who doesn't want a cat to be 34?
Yeah. I think the oldest cat I've ever had personally was almost 20.
Yeah.
And was a very old cat at that. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
All 12 episodes of The Passage are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I have a close friend who's had several cats hit 20. She's obviously got a touch there. What makes me laugh is that two of them have been deeply in love with my husband.
Like, oh, yeah.
To the point where she'll be like, this cat is getting very old and rickety. I don't know how long she has. And Brian will go to her house and the cat turns into Blanche Devereaux and rushes down the stairs and is like, hello, a gentleman caller. He just
so
has
funny.
That magic touch that cats love him. But those two in particular loved him. It was very funny. We used to call them his girlfriends. May we all have long living cats. I have a couple that are 18 right now that I love very much. So I want them to be 34. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Then the oldest dog is also still alive. I don't know how this is pronounced because this dog lives in Portugal and I don't know how they, right? I'm triple checking. Yes. In Portugal, the dog's name is Bobby, B-O-B-I. Cute as pie, and Bobby is 31. And that is very old for a dog. He is a herding and livestock dog.
Mm-hmm.
And he is this russet colored, sweet little kind of barrel chested thing. He looks so cute. His breed is not one I'm familiar with. I may or may not mispronounce this. It's Rifero do Alentejo. I don't know what kind of breed that is. It's a, like I said, a livestock dog.
Mm-hmm.
So cute. And they attribute his longevity to just living in a calm and peaceful environment. He has not had a lot of stressors in his life. He's very loved and very well cared for. So those two are adorable. We love. I love an old animal. Greenland sharks, we think, live to be very, very long, but we don't know how long. I think there are some 300 plusers on record. And then I want to come back to Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
Because Winston Churchill really did love animals. He's an interesting... I understand why there are a kajillion books written about him, because he really is quite an interesting figure. Pluses and minuses there. But one of the things that he did as part of his final arrangements was he wanted Chartwell, his country house, to always have an orange cat named Jock.
Okay.
That was well cared for, because he had a favorite cat named Jock that Sir John Colville had given him as a gift. Sir John Colville was his secretary.
Uh-huh.
And so the National Trust, we said that's a National Trust site, now has to take care of an orange cat along with the grounds as part of the rules. They're on Jock the Third. But apparently Jock the Third is real bad about destroying furniture, so he can't go in any of the main rooms where the antiques are. He is still very, very loved and has a pretty good life, it sounds like, but
yeah,
there have been some rules put in place for Jock the Third.
Sure.
I love it. I love it. Animals, they're wonderful and awful. I love them. I mean, when I say they're awful, I like the bad behaved ones the best.
Yeah.
I'm that person who's like, oh, this cat destroyed your drywall. I'll take it. That's great. I love that cat. Great, great. Oh, that cat, you know, ruined your car. I'll take it. That sounds great.
I'm reminded of the dear departed Mr. Burns turning on the stove.
Oh, he was the worst cat and the best cat. I have only, this sounds very silly, I'm sure, to people that are not pet people, but Mr. Burns has been gone a little over 2 years, and I'm only just now to the point where I can talk about him again. Like, yeah. I really, really loved that dude. But in case anyone's wondering about the stove, we adopted Mr. Burns. He was a rescue that a woman who rescued a lot of cats had found trying to integrate into like a junkyard feral group that she was doing a trap neuter release program with. And they didn't like him. They thought he was like a chupacabra. They didn't think he was a cat.
I mean, to look at this cat.
He was a Devon Rex, and he was very dirty at the time as well, because he clearly did not have the street smarts to live in a junkyard. And she had scooped him up, and he looked very pathetic, and we took him, and he became just my barnacle. He was my baby. And he was very smart and stupid at the same time. Like, he would get in the shower with us, but he wouldn't close his eyes. And so as the water would hit him, he would just look frantic and be looking around. His body would stay still, but his head, and I would be like, just close your eyes, Ding Dong. And he wouldn't do it. And then one day we came home and found him sitting on the top of the stove. Our cats are not allowed on the counters, and we're actually pretty successful at keeping them off. But he was sitting in the middle of the stove with all four burners turned on. Praise Greedo, he did not set himself in the house on fire.
Right.
It's one of the reasons we now only have stoves with like safety things, even though he is now gone. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to risk it ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
Mr. Burns, who is a very bad and very wonderful cat, and I loved him. If you have very bad and wonderful cats, send us those pictures. I love them, especially if you catch them doing the mischief. That's the best part. One other day, I'll tell you about how he stole food from the toaster oven and then got mad at us for taking it from him.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
All 12 episodes of The Passage are available now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We had a very different milk sickness episode than what I thought I was going to be writing. There are so many things that I want to say first. Frankly, Elihu Hall's depiction of Aunt Shawnee is very heavily stereotyped in terms of like how she talked and how she acted and all of that. It definitely reads to me like a 19th century account written by a white person about what they think indigenous people are like. It's very stereotypical. All of that said, though, he actually makes it sound like a collective, collaborative effort between Dr. Anna and Aunt Shawnee. He makes it sound like they were really partners working together. It does not sound like Dr. Anna did it herself and Aunt Shawnee was kind of an afterthought. Like one of the very earliest pages of the book makes this reference to Aunt Shawnee, and he makes it sound like she became part of their community and that they were really working together. And so like, I don't know if this really happened, even without the layers of like very stereotypical and kind of racist language, like the whole story plays into some tropes about indigenous people.
Yeah.
And like with all of that, like, I don't know if it's a true story. All of that said though, like it really irritates me that this account really makes, focuses in a lot of ways on Aunt Shawnee. And like so many articles written in the last 5 or 10 years make it sound like it was Dr. Anna. And I found that annoying. I also found it annoying that anybody thought ever that this was an appropriate book to use as your footnote in a JAMA article. What, like, why?
Yeah, that's weird.
It is deeply obvious to me that it is not that kind of book.
See, my thing now, having heard you talk about, because I didn't read the book, how much she became integrated in their community, and I'm like, and yet no one asked her name.
Yeah, well,
like, that part, I'm just like, shim excuse.
He says something in there that's like, her name must have been really hard to write in English because I don't see it anywhere in Dr. Anna's journal. And I'm like, you really don't? You seem to know that she had a husband named Hawkeye and that Hawkeye had been killed. Like,
well, and we have so many examples throughout history of white people kind of making their own versions of an indigenous person's name that are often screwy, but at least like an attempt was made.
Somebody tried. Well, yeah. And like sometimes there are like sounds that a person who's not a native speaker of a language
right.
can like either really struggle to make or like cannot, their mouth cannot move that way. But then there's also like just a trend of making up different names and not really trying. And like that. So this does have that. Like, you're either telling me that you couldn't be bothered to make up a name for her or that like Dr. Anna could not be bothered to write her name down. Like what? There's questions there. I do not have the context for why Norman Farrell had such a bee in his bonnet about this. I tried to find more information about this person. I found a couple of scattered references to someone who was probably him. He was local to the area. He lived in another town not far away. I think he may have owned like kind of an antique store / estate sale kind of business based on some newspaper advertisements and stuff. I don't know if he was just a very interested person in local history and felt very personally invested in debunking a story that he thought was incorrect, or if there's some other context going on.
Right.
But like this, like literally 10 exhibits of things that he thought was evidence that, that the Elihu Hall's whole account was wrong. And I don't, I kind of imagine him as just like having a bee in his bonnet. And I don't really know. I thought about putting in this in the episode, but I did not, in a weird and just honestly to me upsetting irony. Because there's this element of her story that is about escaping an abusive second husband who tried to kill her.
Right.
There was an intimate partner violence shelter called the Anna Bixby Center, named for her, which unfortunately, as I understand it, is now permanently closed after its directors were charged with fraud a few years ago.
Holy Moses!
So it's like, that's just a whole, like, I think, as I understand it, again, this, like, the shelter was something that the community really needed, and now it is gone because of fraud that was perpetuated, which then just made it, like, a very weird irony that it had been named after somebody who, like, the current account of her has so many question marks.
Oof.
So I felt very weird about that. We also did not talk about the ghost story.
Tell me, I love ghost stories.
There is a doctor and a ghost story. There is a light that apparently you can see sometimes among the bluffs that is supposedly Dr. Anna with her candle. I think searching for the hidden family treasure. I should have refreshed my memory on that aspect of it before coming in here, because I just wrote ghost story in my notes and I didn't write the details down about it.
I have a funny and ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
That one of the people that we referenced in the episode had the last name Barbie, B-A-R-B-E. And it took every scrap of my will not to go, "Hi, Barbie."
They're also the last names of Snively and Furby.
Pretty good.
That's a great pair of last names. Although I have so many questions about your methodology. So I want to stress, we all make mistakes. You and I have made mistakes. We have sometimes made large mistakes. We try to correct our mistakes when we realize we have made them. And I don't want anybody who's written an article about Dr. Anna to feel embarrassed, because like we said, like, it was a JAMA article. You would expect that it would be something you could cite,
yeah,
and that it would be accurate. There are just so many articles that are very specifically focused on celebrating this woman for an achievement that, even according to this incredibly problematic source, was not really her achievement. It was this woman known as Aunt Shawnee who said it's this plant. Like,
right.
I found that very frustrating. So,
yeah.
And it may not have happened at all. We don't really know. It's really, really hard to tell at this point, I think, because in the local area, that book and Ballads from the Bluffs, like, sort of became a part of the cultural conversation as they first came out and kind of influenced people's, quote, memory of this woman. So,
right.
Like, how, unless there is, you know, as yet undiscovered family documents that could offer some more substantiation, really hard to tell what is family lore and what is family lore that came from this book decades ago. I did not want to get into a thing where I was debunking this entire story today. But that's what happens.
We can go back to talking about elderly tortoises.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just sort of a weird irony that the other thing that we recorded today was also included an element of things that have been re-reported in news reporting from the, like, problematic,
incorrect accounts.
Yeah. Not the best.
Trickies.
So, happy Friday, everyone. If you're from Southern Illinois and I just ran roughshod over your entire cultural tradition, really sorry. This was not what my plan was, but this book is not a great source. Feel free to send us a note if you like. We're at historypodcast@iheartradio.com. Did I already say have a great weekend or a great, you know, Saturday, Sunday at work? Whatever's on your plans. I remember the years when I worked every Saturday and Sunday, and sometimes those were great days and sometimes they weren't. Whatever's happening. Hope it's good. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Buenas, buenas, mis amores. This is Vico Ortiz, host of Date My Abuelita First. Each week, myself, alongside our resident abuelita, Liliana Montenegro.
Esa soy yo.
Play matchmaker for a group of hopeful romantics in this fun, flirty, and hilarious game show. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps. Listen to Date My Abuelita First on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.